Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Planes, Trains, and All the Feels by Livy Hart, narrated by Zura Johnson and James Cavanaugh. Chapter 1. Cassidy. My mother will disown me if I miss this flight. Dramatic? Yes. But so is she. I promised I'd be at her disposal all week to help with every painstaking detail of my sister Isabel's wedding. Mom's standards for society gatherings sit about 5 million feet above sea level, and this one is the event to rule them all. The biggest day of her beloved oldest daughter's life. Her chance to shine as mother of the bride. If I screw this up, let's just say Los Angeles hath no fury like Francesca Bliss scorned. Cold sweat beads above my brow as Trixie the Toyota and I drive another circuit of Charlotte Airport's long-term parking lot. A volatile mix of snow and sleet, in spring, courtesy of a moody Mother Earth, swirls all around me, making it difficult to see further than 10 feet in any direction. My plan to appease one mother, thwarted by another. Delightful. Everything would have been fine if I'd made it here an hour ago, as I intended when I chose this particular night flight to bookend an awesome teaching opportunity. But highway traffic moved at a glacial pace for my entire drive from stop, drop, and bop, and I was late leaving class. The dance students were enthusiastic with a capital E, and I couldn't very well run out on them when they wanted to keep filming my choreography. Regardless, I cannot afford to miss a flight that I could barely afford in the first place. I circle the lot like a ground-dwelling hawk, waiting for my opening. If I don't find a spot soon, I may abandon Trixie in the middle of an aisle and make a run for the shuttle. Either that or mow over the motorcycle that decided it was okay to take up 2 spots. 2! When even 1 feels like too much space to afford a glorified scooter. Not that Trixie could mow down anything. My car is about as trustworthy as the pull-out method and threatens death every time I take her more than a few miles. A glint of silver at the very end of the row catches my eye as a minivan reverses out of a space in a slow crawl. An end cap is about to open up. Perfection in parking spot form. I could cry with relief. Gaze fixed on the van, I zoom down the aisle as I breathe through my jitters. I need to pace myself with these nerves. Traveling is the easy part of going home. I fled Los Angeles 2.5 years ago to escape my mother's overbearing orbit. Yet this wedding and my role as maid of honor have sucked me right back in. But since it's my job to ensure this is the champagne wishes soiree of Isabel's dreams, I'll endure the stressors with a smile. Sure, I have nightmares about chocolate fountains overflowing, DJs losing playlists, forgetting important tasks, and socially misstepping and embarrassing myself. As the family black sheep, I'm no stranger to messing up. But I'll keep those fears to myself and make it work. I'll make a toast, eat toast, drink until I'm toasted. Whatever my sister wants until the event wraps late Sunday. I want her to love her big day. I activate my blinker, wind the wheel, ease the gas. Out of nowhere, a Jeep Grand Wagoneer flies around the corner, inserting itself into my spot, so swiftly the van hasn't even had a chance to exit the aisle. A strangled cry leaves my mouth as I punch the roof with my fist. A shower of probably dust, possibly asbestos, rains onto the center console. Crap on a dry, saltless cracker. This can't be happening. That Jeep driver had to have seen me and my blinker. An 82 banana yellow Toyota Tercel doesn't go unnoticed. I should let it go and keep searching. Any other day I would, but right now I need the win. As soon as the van vacates the area, I pull forward and throw my car into park directly behind the all-terrain offender. I'm so close to the Jeep, the automatic trunk almost hits my car as it glides open. Scrambling out of the driver's seat, I grip the mirror to steady myself. By the time I'm upright and staring over the top of my car, the owner emerges. Oh. The sound catches in my throat. My gaze traces the cut of his fancy coat first. It hits just above the knee when he straightens to full height and has the distinct sheen of a wool cashmere blend. He's gloved, scarved, beanied, and dressed to the nines. Even his glasses are stylish, rimmed in black, perched on a perfectly sculpted face. If I was in the business of judging a book by its cover, I'd call his ensemble excessively corporate. Apart from his scarf. Something about the red and white striped knitwear hugging his neck. How very Where's Waldo of him. When the rest of him is decked out in inky black, suggests a hint of whimsy and free will. As in, he staunchly abides by the rules of civilized society, but he's willing to walk on the wild side just this once to steal my spot. This is a man who does not need a win, because those clothes and that pretty face scream forever first place. I snap shut my mouth and recover the thoughts he knocked out of my head. Hi, excuse me. He freezes, a posh deer in the headlights. I had my blinker on and I was just about to pull in. My voice is blown sugar, sweet and a breath away from breaking. Please, I really need that spot. I'm in a huge hurry and, well, you seem like a reasonable...
I prefer Whirlpool, but it's up to you.
He closes his door.
You're the one who has to use it every day.
I look left, right, and center. Huh?
Do you really think that's safe? I can have it replaced.
He continues, removing a black tote bag from his trunk.
We're probably long overdue.
Confusion ripples through me as I try to make sense of his statement. Am I having a stress-induced meltdown? I wave my ungloved, now freezing hand to make sure I have his attention as snow clings to my sleeves. I'm not sure what you're talking about, but I said you took my spot. I smack the top of Trixie. And I'd be grateful if you'd reconsider. I've been searching for 20 minutes for a place to park, and I'm desperate to make my flight. He turns his head, lifts his beanie, and flashes me an AirPod. My cheeks heat. I see you're on a call, but...
Hold on, Sophie.
He turns his gaze to me.
Ma'am, I'm sorry, but I got this spot fair and square, and I'm kind of in a hurry. Is there something else you need?
I blanch. If I look like a ma'am, it's time for a night serum. And he's all but ignored my plea. I'm in a hurry, too. This is my space, and you know it. I used my blinker.
I also used my blinker.
He gestures at Trixie as he hitches the tote bag higher on his shoulder.
For what it's worth, yours wasn't blinking. You should probably get that looked at, for safety purposes.
Before I can so much as open my mouth to respond, he removes a black suitcase from his immaculately clean trunk, wheels around, and lifts his key fob in the air. The Jeep locks with a loud double beep as he struts off, dragging his luggage behind him. My head tips back, and I curse the sky. As I descend further into panic, red taillights cut through the haze. An engine roars to life two rows over. Someone's leaving. I throw myself back in the driver's seat of my car and slam the door shut. The latch doesn't catch, so I slam it three more times until it does. The clock mocks me from the dash. The only part of the console not broken. 7:26 p.m. I soar through the lot at a reckless speed and claim the space. Park the car. Race to security, board the plane.
One item down, two to go. Pulling my luggage behind me, I tread carefully toward the covered shuttle stop, wishing I could sprint. Curse these heeled boots and my desire not to flatline my entire dance career by slipping in a slush puddle and twisting my ankle. A shuttle is idling. The headlights suggest as much, even if I can barely see the vehicle through the fog. The blurry outline of a person comes into view. "Hold the door!" I cry, clomping like a snowshoer so I can strike the ground with even footfalls. I flail my free arm. "Please, hold the shuttle!" That blurry outline of a human is wearing the Waldo scarf. I laser my focus, imagining it as a striped finish line. The fabric whips out of sight as he boards. I pull choppy breaths as I close in. My luggage slips out of my hand, and I stumble to recover it. Waldo may have screwed me over with the spot, but only a true jerk would leave someone out in the cold. He'll tell the driver to wait, and people tend to listen to men who look like that. The shuttle roars to life and pulls away from the curb, leaving me in the slush dust. So much for my win.
Chapter 2 Luke. This airport smells like rubbing alcohol and impending doom. I drag my suitcase over splotchy linoleum, striding toward the gate, a necessary evil on the path to the other, more essential evil, planes. If there is a greater hell on earth than riding a metal tube hurtling through the air at almost 600 miles per hour, sloshing around like ice at the bottom of a cup at the slightest turbulence, I cannot think of it. And we pay for this privilege. In fact, we spend a sizable sum to board these flying caskets. On the plus side, I'm here. I made it with 6 minutes to spare, against all odds, and by that I mean a lengthy meeting that could have been an email if I didn't respect the client so much. I'm catching this flight. The size of the crowd inside the gate is hovering room only, so jam-packed that I have to maneuver it like an obstacle course. I scan overhead for the CLT to LAX sign. 0 minutes to boarding. My stomach lurches. It'd be nice if I could enjoy this feat of travel luck, an on-time departure in the middle of a storm. Instead, my imagination conjures up creative scenarios involving planes colliding on a hazy runway, wings ripped off and dangling like hangnails. I close my eyes and exhale. At least on board, I'll be able to purchase in-flight Wi-Fi to distract myself with the Hopstetter file. The art of disconnecting is not a skill I've mastered. I may be technically off the next 4 days, but my work brain never powers down. My suitcase plays bumper cars with someone else's as I maneuver toward the jet bridge. Sophie's voice yanks me back into our conversation. "Are you still listening, Luke?" "Right. I was listening. Am. I love my sister, but the woman is long-winded on every topic except the one I called her to discuss. Mom. Instead, we spent the entirety of the shuttle ride to this terminal discussing Sophie's temperamental washing machine, and when I called her back after stripping down for TSA in the name of safety, she managed to steer the conversation to her penchant for killing houseplants, blowing past my questions about the family. Yes, still listening. The house has humidity, and that matters because leaves? I'm going to accidentally drown and or dehydrate this fiddle-leaf fig. It is faded. I roll my eyes. She's a single mother and a nurse who actively keeps my niece's mother and tons of patients thriving every day, but has decided she needs more things to care for. I have to let you go. Hang in there, take a few deep breaths, and don't water it with battery acid. You'll be fine. I'll get right on that deep breathing thing just as soon as... Mom, hold on! You already did your insulin, remember? Sophie exhales, and the crackling is loud in my ear. I'll call you after I put Mom and the girls to bed. Have fun at work. After a goodbye I'm not sure she heard, I tap my AirPod. Little does she know, I'm not en route to a work conference as I led her to believe. By the time she would have called me back this evening, I'll already be in Bakersfield, listening to her plant saga in person. Following weeks of Sophie avoiding questions about Mom, my instincts tell me it's time for an impromptu visit home to make sure everything is okay, and to consume as many Salsa Shack tacos as humanly possible with my best and only friend Will McClary, but mostly the family stuff. My sister and I have an unspoken agreement. I send money, and she spends it to keep Mom from torpedoing her own life, whether it's bills, medicine, or shiny distractions that keep her out of trouble. I send a check, and she handles the day-to-day. Sophie's boots on the ground, dealing with the caretaking. I'm Luke in the office, 13 hours a day. This system works well enough. It allows me to keep my job working for my mentor-turned-boss, Rogelio, the man I owe my career to, enable Sophie to pay for her daughter's private school and have some financial breathing room, and gives Mom nearly full-time care. And Sophie's around to head off Mom's vodka benders before they gain steam. A win-win-win. Mostly. Living 2,000 miles away is not without its challenges. Sweat gathers beneath my collar as I duck my head to enter the plane. It's like stepping through a portal to a different dimension where every object is small and distinctly foreboding. I stow my coat and belongings overhead and plop down in 18D. After two more ups and downs to let my seatmates board, I scan my downloaded playlists for something that will distract me until I've calmed down or can get out my laptop, whichever comes first. By the time I've settled and my blood pressure has somewhat regulated, my AirPods beep four pitiful beeps. Rustling the case from my pocket, I flick open the lid. My phone screen lights up to inform me the charging case is also dead. With a pang of misery, I blink up to check my seat back for a USB outlet. My attention is stolen by a woman hustling onto the plane, clutching her chest like she just completed the 26th mile of a marathon. Her heavy steps echo, alerting the entire cabin to her presence. She cyclones through first class, clumsily dragging her suitcase down the aisle, apologizing to each of the five people she bumps along the way. I tuck my elbows and legs firmly in my row and return to my USB hunt, craning my neck to check the nooks of my armrests. No outlets. This plane must be old. As I'm racking my brain for correlation statistics about aircraft age and safety outcomes, I glance up and catch an eyeful of ass at close range. Jesus. The late arrival is bent over and digging around her suitcase. If she's aware she is practically sitting on my face, she shows no signs of it. She snaps up, granola bar in hand. Victory! Several people peer her way as she tosses it on the empty seat. Her long, shiny hair cascades down her back as she then attempts to rearrange the suitcases already positioned in the overhead bin above her row. Wow. I'm a sucker for the effortless sexiness of curve-hugging jeans, and this woman is wearing the absolute hell out of them. Her shirt is a bright, shimmery white that makes her pale skin look tan, and that hair... Wait. As quickly as the appreciation for her stirs, it disappears when I place the distinctive red color. I almost didn't recognize her now that she's lost her coat and isn't yelling over the top of the world's yellowest car, but it's definitely her. The woman from the parking lot. With the memories of that bizarre interaction fresh in my brain, I filter her appearance through the questionable personality lens. Nope, still gorgeous. When she fails to create space for her own luggage by jostling stranger suitcases, she turns around to check the other overhead bin, the one that stretches over my row. Unfortunately, the front of her is just as alluring as the back. I snag on her pretty mouth, just like I did when she was talking to me in the parking lot. The combination of her red hair, white shirt, and blue jeans unlocks an association in my brain. She looks like one of those rocket pops my neighbor's parents always used to stock in their outside freezer. Red, white, and blue. Had she not accosted me earlier, I might think she's just as sweet. She hoists her suitcase off the ground. Her body sways dangerously, but she quickly rights her balance and thrusts it toward the bin. The muscles in her arm quiver as she huffs and puffs under her breath.
Get in there. Dang it!
I launch out of my seat and catch her luggage before it knocks her out. Easy there. She tightens her hold on the hard shell.
I got it.
It teeters sideways, putting the dude in the seat in front of me at risk. I all but steal it from her grip to turn it on its side. In this position, it slides in easily. Her face tilts up, and her gaze finds mine. Recognition flickers in her eyes. She scowls. Damned is she ever. Really gives it her all, pursing her lips and narrowing her eyes.
Oh.
I cock my head sideways. Oh, what?
Now you want to be helpful. Where was this energy in the lot?
Apparently she's clinging to her parking lot vendetta. But honestly, the scowl is unfounded. I probably saved her life back there. Because of me, she'll get her blinker checked, sparing her an accident down the road. I offer her a tight smile. Excuse me for trying to save you from a suitcase concussion. That thing is a hazard. Soft luggage is safer. And uglier. I was totally handling it, by the way. Irritation seeps into my tone. I back into my row with my hands raised. Fine. My mistake.
Why are you annoyed? You took my spot and then proceeded to leave me out in the cold.
I rapid-fire blink, trying to recalibrate. What? I explained this to you in the lot, ma'am.
Not, ma'am,
she splutters, leaning even further into my already limited personal space.
That's a life level I haven't unlocked. My name is Cassidy.
Pleasure to meet you. I'm Luke.
And not only did you cut off my car, you didn't hold the door. I almost missed this flight.
I grapple for some semblance of understanding. Hold the door? If you'll both have a seat? A sharp voice says from behind me, I'm going to close the bins for takeoff. Rocket Pop, Cassidy, nearly whacks me with the overstuffed purse slung over her shoulder as she jerks it forward. The thing is a bludgeoning weapon and bursting at the seams. She frees two plastic cards from its stuffed depths, slides them in her pocket, and stows the bag overhead. I move sideways into my row to let the flight attendant do her job. Cassidy plops down in 17C, an aisle seat on the opposite side, one row ahead. She pivots in her seat to face me.
When you boarded the shuttle, I was behind you, yelling for you to hold it. And you apparently decided it wasn't worth saying something to the driver, probably because I yelled at you in the lot, which, yeah, I was frustrated. I interrupted your call. I'm sorry, but I thought surely you wouldn't leave a girl out in the cold. Guess I was wrong.
Wow. With a series of leaps that large, she could have long jumped the distance to the terminal. Fire kindles low in my gut. Whoa. Let's take about three giant steps back. I didn't hear you, or see you coming.
I find it hard to believe you didn't hear me. I was yelling.
It's the truth. It's windy, and I was in the middle of a call. My AirPods do a pretty good job canceling noise. This was not an intentional slight. Do you always turn misunderstandings into character assassinations, or is this a special occasion?
It's not a character assassination against you personally. I just know your type.
A laugh threatens to spill out. I've known Uber drivers longer than this girl, and she's about to speculate on what type of person I am. And yet, curiosity is like a hot poker against my tongue. And what's my type exactly? The woman directly across the aisle from me, the seat behind Cassidy, overtly listens to this exchange, her gaze ping-ponging between us. Cassidy, however, doesn't seem to notice any other humans on the plane exist. Her sights are set on me and me alone.
The type that thinks they are super important and that everyone should accommodate them. People who take what they want.
And where are you getting that from?
Her eyes, glacially blue and just as cold, rake me up and down as she twists further in her seat. Well, let's see. Expensive woolen cashmere coat, possibly Italian, indicating you have an important job and or social life and can't risk showing up somewhere late or messy. The rest of you looks like you called up Mr. J. Crew and asked what he was going to wear to the merger meeting so you wouldn't match, but then said, screw it, I'll wear that too. You're probably someone's boss, used to people doing what you want, and good at everything.
Sherlock has nothing on this woman. She could teach a masterclass on how to draw elaborate conclusions out of thin air. I may have committed her genes, and fine, her exceptional ass, to memory, but her level of observation is on another level. And it's all so epically wrong, I almost want to correct her. But she doesn't need to know this coat was a gift from Rogelio when I took the job in North Carolina, that my social life leaves much to be desired, or that I'm balls deep in a 20-game basketball losing streak against Will, and I'll likely chalk up another L while I'm home this week. So instead, I perch my elbows on my thighs and offer her a forced smile. Totally. You pegged me. I'm the CEO of Google. I hold several world records, and of course I have somewhere to be, as do you. We're on a plane. You can cast judgment on my clothes and behavior all you want. It doesn't change the fact that the shuttle thing was unintentional. The fire in her eyes seems to extinguish, leaving something ashen in its place. But she lets out a little humph. If you were CEO of Google, you'd take a private plane. If I were CEO of Google, I'd have used my capital to invent a teleportation device. Happy flying, Cassidy. I shove my dead AirPods back into my ears and settle into my seat, hoping she takes the hint. If I have to speak to Cassidy again, it'll be too soon.
Chapter 3. Cassidy. Cast judgment all you want. Luke's deep, rumbly voice plays in my head, continuing to froth my irritation. As if it's such a ridiculous thing to assume he'd hear me hollering across a parking lot, or that he has an important job based on how he dresses. Sue me. Heck, it's probably his job to sue me. I free my phone from my pocket and wriggle to get comfortable. Lofty aspirations in this seat, with less padding than a Victoria's Secret bra. I'm ready for a stiff drink, or heck, a flaccid one. But I'll settle for a familiar face to smooth the rough edges of my mood. My roommate, Berkeley, answers my FaceTime on the first ring. Miss me already, Blossom? She's curled up in her bed, my corgi, Elvis, nestled in the crook of her arm. Pillows of every shape and color surround her, a veritable rainbow of poofs in lieu of a headboard. Her dark curls starkly contrast the backdrop of her butter-yellow wall. Where are your headphones? She lowers her voice to a whisper and brings the phone right up to her face, aggressively suspicious of men after her whirlwind divorce. Berkeley assumes my every phone call is a cry for help, in which I'm trapped in an uncomfortable situation with a dude. Is something wrong? I can't come rescue you off the plane, but I'm happy to put any travelers in their place if you pass the phone. My pretty little cherub of a best friend, with her porcelain complexion and innocent blue eyes, keeps her sharpest arrows on the tip of her tongue. She's not bluffing when she says she'll put someone in their place. I warm at the offer, even if it's wholly unnecessary. I peer at my seatmate. Possibly an octogenarian, who is already snoozing with his chin to his chest. Nah, I'm safe. I called because I forgot my headphones, along with several other things. I'm going to text you a list of things to grab before you fly out, if you've got room in your suitcase. Sure. No promises I'll be able to find anything in your disaster heap of a bedroom, though. You need shelves, Rubbermaids, a shoe purge. Someone to throw away any beauty product older than 1 year. I can help you. A voice blares through the plane's speakers. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of the crew, I ask that you please direct your attention to the flight attendants as we review our safety procedures. I lower my voice and slump down in my seat.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?